These are the stories I think you should know about today. Donald Trump makes the cover of Time magazine, but he's furious about it. Why? I'm going to tell you. Is Trump the, quote, leader that Israel needed? Quote, that's in quotations. What does it say about him? What does it say about from Reagan all the way to Biden and all the presidents in between? What were they? Anti-Israel? Really? And China says Zaijian to Microsoft. That means goodbye, by the way, in Mandarin. Is it a new high-tech trend? Certainly looks that way. This is the Sanchez Effect. Let's do it. Hello again, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez. You know, if you grew up in America in the 1980s, like I did, there are two things that signaled success. One is being on the cover of Time magazine, by golly. And the other is having good hair. I find it weird how today, interestingly enough, a lot of guys, young men especially, they'd almost rather shave their heads and be bald than have hair. But in the 80s and the 90s, it was very different. So with that said, look at this. That is Donald Trump on the cover of Time magazine. That's a big deal for him. You see, for guys of his generation, Time magazine, man, that signaled fame. Several million people would read it, and even more would see it. But today, it's just not the case. My YouTube page, my X account, both reach infinitely more people than the number of people who read Time magazine these days. But old habits die hard. So Trump, he should be very happy, right? After all, he just got Israel to stop killing Palestinians. Time magazine is giving him props for it. So is he happy? No, he's not. As a matter of fact, he's pissed off. Why? Take a look at the picture again. Look at the angle. Look at the angle it's taken from. Look at that really ugly turkey neck that seems to say he's really old and is telling the world so. And then there's the hair, right? What hair, you ask? Trump, who grew up with the Beatles and seemed almost proud of his Glen Campbell hairdo. To him, hair matters.
Time magazine wrote a relatively good story about me, but the picture may be the worst of all time. They disappeared my hair and then had something floating on top of my head that looked like a floating crown, but an extremely small one. Really weird. I never liked taking pictures from underneath angles, but this is a super bad picture and deserves to be called out. What are they doing and why?
Is he right? Well, I think so. It's a really bad picture. And did they do it on purpose because they don't like him? Probably. But there's something more important that this Time magazine cover reveals that is likely even more negative. Perhaps maybe not to Trump. He doesn't see this. But the rest of the world sees this. And they moan, and they find it even more unattractive than the photo. You know what it is? Look at this. Look at the subheading in the article. Do you see that right there? The leader that Israel needed is what it says. You see, to Trump, that may be a point of pride that he's Israel's guy, right? But to the rest of the world, it means he was played by a country that's been playing U.S. presidents for decades, but never quite like this. Think about that for a minute. Presidents Reagan, Clinton, Bush, Obama, Biden, they all did exactly what Israel wanted. Not a single one of them has ever really taken sides against Israel. Some would even argue that they took orders from Israel. And now Trump is heralded as the, quote, leader Israel needed? What were those other guys? Those guys who were anti-Israel? Come on. So if every U.S. president was beholden to Israel, but only Trump is the one they really needed, what does that say about Trump? Some would say this moment says it all.
Got $60 billion in the bank, $60 billion. And she loves, and she loves, I think she's saying no more. But I actually asked her, I'm going to get her in trouble with this, but I actually asked her once, I said, so Miriam, I know you love Israel. What do you love more, the United States or Israel? She refused to answer. That means, that might mean Israel.
She loves Israel more than the United States. That's what he just said. That woman, American casino owner Miriam Adelson, who loves Israel as much or maybe more than the United States, gave Mr. Trump a check for $109 million to get him elected and, of course, to make sure he did right by Israel. Her husband, Sheldon Adelson, who has since died, gave Mr. Trump and the Republican Party a reported $424 million to get Mr. Trump elected, and you guessed it, to make sure he did right by Israel. Now, stop and think for a moment about that, right? It means Israel, just through the Adelsons, there's plenty more like them, but just through the Adelsons, gave more than $500 million to make sure Donald Trump got elected. And the U.S. media doesn't even cover that. But some Russian guy somewhere buys $10,000 worth of Facebook ads against Hillary Clinton, and the media is screaming, Russian collusion, and the guy gets impeached for it. Think about that for a minute. I mean, if you don't think that's preposterous, unfair, ridiculous, and hypocritical, then you need to go right now to a dictionary, and you need to look up the definition of the word double standard. By the way, amid all the fanfare for the Trump and Netanyahu peace plan, which is the greatest giveaway for Israel in history, good for them, right? There was something else that happened behind the scenes. Unlike with the Israel and Egypt spectacles, which were heavy on style and light on substance, Russian diplomats, who knew? Russian diplomats, through very quiet diplomacy, were able to help with the release of an Israeli hostage. Nobody knew about this because I guess they didn't know about it when it was happening because it was kept on the down low. But the mother of one of the hostages has just let the cat out of the bag by publicly thanking President Putin and wanted to actually even have a meeting with him. Her son, Maxim Karkin, he was born in the Donbass, there he is, lived in Israel, was taken hostage by Hamas on October 7th during the attack. Natalia Karkin and her family, there she is with her son, they want to travel now to Moscow to thank the Russian president. Now, interesting, I know, this is not the most important story in the world, but you know what? To that one family, it is. And it highlights a startling difference between what is quiet, detailed diplomacy and the other type, the one where showbiz, look at me, and the cover of Time magazine's carry the day. I got to tell you about something that's happening in China that's really important, right? After years of building a bilateral relationship economically with the United States, where everyone seemed to know what the score was, right? And everyone seemed to know their place. Chinese workers would make the products that Americans buy, and the U.S. big tech companies would supply China with some high-tech infrastructure. Well, that was a pretty good plan while it lasted, because it appears now the party's over, or almost over. Look at this headline. China has just signaled that it's shutting out MS Word. See that right there in the headline? That's Microsoft Word, to those of you who may not be familiar with the abbreviation. Given the continued tariff war and the nasty relations between Washington and Beijing, you know what it looks like to me? It looks like China's bailing on the Silicon Valley billionaires who have made billions in a very cozy relationship for years now with China. So here's what's going on. Since the 1980s, I'll bring you up to date. The United States and China had a deal. Your low-paid workers, instead of American workers, will make our stuff, you know, the stuff we buy at, like, Walmart. And we, America, will do your high-tech stuff, like building microchips, for example. China held up its part of the deal, and it did so well. Its economy exploded because of it. but it kind of feels unappreciated these days and beat around. And besides, it kind of feels like its technology, when it comes now to chips and phones and software, has in many ways surpassed that of the U.S. So here's what's going on. Now, China is stepping on the gas when it comes to high tech. Look at that. Look what that says right there. Its own version of Microsoft just hit 100 million daily users. That is called self-reliance. Is China kicking out Western companies and turning instead to domestic alternatives? Certainly looks that way. So as we follow this and have for some time here, the battle lines are starting to be drawn. And the war, it seems, has just begun. Einar Tangen is a senior fellow at the Tehi Institute and the founder of Asia Narratives on Substack. It's a great read, by the way, for those of you who haven't found him yet, and he's good enough to join us now. Mr. Tangen, it's good to have you here on the Sanchez Effect, sir.
Rick, it's a pleasure. I was listening to your monologue. Very interesting stuff. You bring a lot of things to light that you don't really see in the press.
Yeah, I get told that all the time. I was just reading on Twitter. Tons of people have been, I was talking to my producer, Boris, and I was saying, can you believe this? Everybody seems to be saying, you're saying the things they're not saying. You're saying the things they're not saying. I guess at least it's important to say them. Let's talk a little bit about China, because it seems to me that China has found a way of doing something that maybe they could have done a long time ago, and that is building self-reliance when it comes to things like microchips, for example. Do you see that trend as well that I saw this morning when I woke up and read these headlines?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and it's a lot of it's been forced. In terms of Microsoft, there is a backstory to this, and that is Microsoft had a very odd instance where they were dead to rights in a monopoly case because they were basically controlling everything at the time through Windows, and a whole bunch of states joined in the action. But suddenly, after losing the first round, before the second round, there was a very quiet dismissal above the objections of nine states. And what was rumored to have happened is that they gave the backdoor keys to the Microsoft products and that they were open. Now, the Chinese government has actually said no using Microsoft Office in the government for some years now. And this is just the next step. But this is one part of what is happening, as you know, you pointed out, the agreement that China does all the dirty work and U.S. takes the profits. That's over. China is now ahead in many critical areas. There was ASPE, which is a Australian think tank, said that China was way ahead in 46 out of 54 different areas. Don't quote me on those numbers, but in the overwhelming number of areas that are of future concern. This is the digital economy, the one where if you invest now and you do it right, you would have much lower investment costs and amounts than if you tried to reindustrialize, and the profits would be much higher. And this is one of the things that bothers a lot of people about the direction Trump is going, is why are you investing in something that's capital intensive and low margin, will add capacity and result in a price war, even if you are successful in building this. So China has said, look, they're going to double down on the digital economy. Yep. What they have been doing is making sure that they can produce in volume. So China's specialty is the economies of scale. Vitamin C, 98% of the world. I mean, you could go down a list of chemicals, everything that goes into pharmaceuticals, into cleaning agents, into industrial agents. These are all done in bulk here, and it's almost impossible to pull those away because of the amount of money that you'd have to invest and the very, very low margin return that you would get.
I'm wondering.
So there's that part.
I'm wondering, as I'm listening to you, whether what happened was that Mr. Trump's actions have pushed China over the edge. And I think where I'm going here after listening to you was this has been coming for some time, and China could have done this before, and they could have accelerated this move 5 to 7, 10 years ago, but they've decided to play along with the United States to give the United States its sense of import, right? But with Trump putting his foot on the gas and China would say mistreating them, they're just saying now, to hell with you. We're going to go ahead and blow out everything having to do with high tech, even if it's at your expense. Is that a fair assessment?
Not at all. And the reason I say that is right now, if you'd asked people before the election, who do you want, Trump or Biden, they would have said, well, what's the difference between poison and playing Russian roulette with four of the chambers loaded? But today, tune has changed. Donald Trump is the greatest gift that China has received since the WTO was ratified.
Wow.
He has done what no one in China even thought would be possible. Not that they wanted to do it, but breaking apart America's allies, alienating its neighbors, creating a complete world breakdown of the very institutions that it created, and forcing China to put it into high gear in terms of digital development. They now are gaining every single day on chip production. The guy Huang over at NVIDIA has said they're a microsecond away from overtaking us. And this is all due to Donald Trump. If he had not pushed it, China would have said, okay, look, we don't want trouble. We will do what we do. You do what you do. And we'll try to work it out. But now Donald Trump has given them no choice. And right now, Chinese people are happy and proud and very thankful to Donald Trump.
My mother used to say that with son, she used to say, but she said it in Spanish, lo que no mata engorda, she used to say, that which doesn't kill you will only make you stronger. And I think to a certain extent, that's kind of what is working for China right now, no?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this idea that things, I mean, UNDP late last week came out with a study that said by 2030, China will be 45% of the world's manufacturing. U.S. will sink down to 11%. Mm. So I guess they don't really have faith that Donald Trump is going to reindustrialize the United States. And none of the statistics show it. Their jobs are actually being lost because he's protecting industries, which means that the downstream industries, if you're doing anything with steel and aluminum, you can't export. Why? Because you have to buy at such a huge, over your competitors internationally.
Right.
That there's no way. There's no way you can do it. So they're shedding jobs. So for every job he saves or creates in the steel mills, he's losing four or five downstream. So this, once again, is not a recipe for success for the United States. He's simply driving the United States into the ground. He thinks he's doing great things, but it's like putting bleach in your veins. Probably not a good idea.
Do you think, though, that his idea, at least, of trying to reindustrialize the United States, increase manufacturing in the United States, stopping the trend where everything Americans buy is made in Vietnam and made in China and elsewhere? I mean, in principle, that's a good concept, right?
No. I mean, we're talking about $3.2 trillion in 10 years to reindustrialize the United States, but the cost would still be higher. Now, he wants to devalue the dollar by another 30% or up to 20%. His initial target was 30% devaluation. But even at that devaluation, U.S. Wages are not competitive. You know, think in India, the same amount that you pay for $100 of labor in the U.S. costs $3 in India.
Wow.
Right. Now, they have, concerns about electricity and infrastructure and things like that. But if you're doing something labor intensive, then you can go to Bangladesh. There's all so many countries that are there. And even in China, for $100 in labor in the United States, you pay $20 in China. But China has another advantage in that they have a secure supply chain. That means when you need something, you don't have to send across the world for it.
Yes.
It's not going to take a month and a half. They have it right there across the street or within, a few hours of being delivered. You tell me who's going to be more efficient, who's going to be able to create new products when they have everything they need literally at their fingertips. And this, you know, you can talk to anybody in any of the industries. I was chair of my state's International Trade Council in the United States. You know, and even back then, we're, you know, 25 years ago, it was quite clear that we could not keep up with China's prototyping because they just had everything then. That was 25 years ago. And now, you know, obviously China has taken advantage of it. You look at their schools. I mean, the schools 25 years ago, you know, who was considering, oh, yes, Tsinghua and Beidou, good schools, but they're not in the top 100. They're just there. Okay. Now, Chinese institutions are not only producing, are risen in the ranks in the top 50, and there's tons of them in there, but they are now regularly producing, you know, papers that are being cited by other scientists that are being used in new productions. You know, you start looking at this, it's quite clear what is happening. The question is, why is Donald Trump responding? I mean, if you industrialize in the U.S., you're going to have to use robots. There's no way around that.
They're going to be made in China.
Yeah, they'll be made. Well, maybe you make it in the United States, but they're three times as much. You know, it's like the Apple phone. Yes, you can make it in the U.S. How do you feel about paying three times more? And most people are just saying, well, I'm not that anxious to have an Apple phone from the United States. Right now, people in the U.S. are in hard times. They're experiencing things. I mean, I'm not a big fan of hers, but, you know, one of Trump's main supporters has been coming out and just telling it like it is. Yeah. Insurance is up. You know, a cost of food is up. People are losing jobs. Everything's more expensive. And no one in Washington seems to give a damn. That's why Donald Trump was elected. He was the guy who was supposed to change everything. And unfortunately, all it is doubling down or the same.
What do you make of this recent threat just within the last five, 6 days of 100% tariffs on China that really seemed to come out of nowhere? Do you have some kind of explanation for why he would do something like that? Because the causality on it, the explanation for why he did it, didn't seem like it was that big of a deal to me.
Well, you have to understand, it hit him at a weak moment. He didn't get the Nobel Peace Prize. His party is having a hard time keeping the House from demanding, passing and getting enough votes to release the Epstein files. Not a good day for him. And he really wanted to bask in the glory of getting the Nobel Peace Prize and then, you know, waltzing off to Israel and Egypt and, you know, getting all these prizes and all this adoration. Well, it didn't happen. Instead, what he got confronted with is that the bully is not in control. And this enrages him. But it's taco all over again. Rick, I want to ask you a question.
Go ahead.
If you had somebody on your cabinet, all right, who's telling you that, you know, tariffs are good, put them on ships, right? $400 million, you know, if just 100% tariffs and everything is going to solve everything. But whose kids, his kids, this is the one who is creating products for the taco trade, okay? The Trump always chickens out trade. They have been creating products for it. While their dad pushes these nonsensical ideas that would ruin what's left of the American economy, his kids are making billions of dollars.
Yeah.
Basically saying, oh, don't believe it. So you tell me, what would you think of your kids who are doing that if you're working for a guy?
Well, I start to wonder, and I've had this conversation recently with friends, and I don't think I'm in a position to make the accusation, but you start to wonder if there's some kind of market manipulation going on somewhere when decisions are haphazardly made that make Wall Street go down three full points, 899 points or percentages, and then it goes up 3 days later when someone changes their mind and announces a policy that's the converse of what he just announced. I start to shake my head. I don't want to be cynical, but I'm being cynical, I guess.
Rick, you just don't believe in that Santa Claus, the Easter Bunny, or the Tooth Fairy either, I bet.
Right.
Anyway, you know, the key here is the SEC. If you control the SEC and they're not bothering to look at the red flags of the amount of activity shortly before these announcements, All right. And if you have the Justice Department who's not looking into it either, gee whiz, I guess you could get away with a lot of stuff. Kind of like, well, we're not going to enforce the Corrupt Practices Act because, hey, who needs to do that, right? Mm. And besides, I got friends. I mean, there are business people out there who, you know, they shouldn't be penalized by simply giving a few gifts here and there, of which Donald Trump, he's willing to take an airplane here and there worth $400 million.
Not to mention tripling
his wealth and the wealth of his family, tripling in the last 10 months. That's a pretty good record.
Explain to our audience who's not market savvy how, if you had the power to do so, you can send out a tweet, an announcement, whatever the hell it's called, that makes the market go up or down, and how you would then benefit from that. You're not saying you have evidence that it's happening. Neither am I, to cover ourselves. But if you did want to do that, how exactly, explain to our viewers how that would happen.
Okay, so let's say I have a meme coin. Now, what is a meme coin? Meme coin has no value. It's a collectible. It's not even physical. You just say, oh, I bought a meme coin, right? But let's say you release some announcement that crypto is going to be accepted in the United States. Now, most people don't know the difference between a crypto coin, which has a, you know, it's like a meme coin, except it's supposed to have some sort of value. Mm-hmm. And it's also somewhat regulated.
Yeah.
See, a meme coin, if you read the fine print, which of course nobody does, it says this has no value. But people confuse it with a crypto coin. So what happens? Well, people ran up the price of meme coins. And they say, oh, I want some of these. This is going to be worth something, right? And guess what? The people who are selling them the meme coins didn't buy them. They just had them in these purses. And all of a sudden, they were selling, but they weren't buying any. And all of a sudden, the price went down because they could satisfy the supply. And they kept selling until it got to a certain point, and then they stopped selling. But by that time, hundreds of millions of dollars of things. If I know I'm going to put tariffs on any particular area or generally, there are all sorts of places where I know that there are industries, okay, that are going to be affected by this. And as soon as I put the tariffs on, their stock is going to go down.
Mm.
So if I take a short position and I say, well, I say to some guy, hey, you have 100 shares of stock. I'd like to borrow them. I'll pay you a little bit of interest, and I'll give you back the shares in 2 months or 1 week, whatever. Well, if I know that there's going to be an announcement that's going to affect the value of this company's shares, gee whiz, I can make a lot of money because I don't pay him for the stock. I pay him a minuscule amount to borrow the stock for a period of time with the promise that I'll pay him back the same exact amount of stock. Mm. But if the price was at 100 and it drops to 50, guess what? Maybe I paid 50 cents for the option, all right, borrowing that stock. And guess what? I've made $49.50 from my 50 cents.
Times whatever.
So right. Knowledge is power on the street. You know what's going to happen. You can be a multi-zillionaire in no time.
The thing is, what you just described is illegal.
Yes, it's called insider trading. People, I mean, you remember Martha Stewart, lovely lady, always cooking? She went to jail because of insider trading. She was sitting at a dinner and some guy dropped a hint that he thought this stock was going to do something. But he was an insider. He was connected to that company. She went up and bought a bunch of stock and she went to jail for it. Now, that was a minor case. Imagine if you were dealing with tens or even hundreds of millions of dollars.
Somebody's got to know. This is happening too often.
Well,
I mean,
it's happening, but the watchdogs, all right, are the SEC and, you know, the Attorney General.
So right now the SEC is not independent of the U.S. government, as it should be?
Oh, I perish the thought. I'm sure they're looking in all sorts of directions. Maybe not in the right one, but in the other directions. I mean, there are reports, if you read the Wall Street Journal and the financial papers, they say, look, there was a kind of unusual activity prior to the announcement, right? Don't you remember Donald Trump after, you know, the big bounce? And he had all these big CEOs in the White House.
Yes, I remember.
And he said to him, I made you guys a lot of money today.
Ugh.
Wow. That's really hiding it.
That's like what he just said.
That alone would be like, okay, time to indict him. Except the Supreme Court says if he talked to anybody in government and it's an official act, he, of course, cannot be prosecuted.
It's like what he just did with Miriam Adelson. I can't believe he stood
there
in the Knesset and said, she's rich. She gave me so much money, and her husband would walk into my office anytime he wanted to. He didn't even have to make an appointment. And I'm thinking,
no. He said, don't come. I'm the president of the United States. And he said, and the guy would come anyways. How do you have that much clout that you can walk in on the president? All right. I've been to the White House. You do not walk in on the president. They have all sorts of people there who prevent anybody from getting in. And then you have to get past, you know, the outside office. Hey, Secretary, do you have an appointment? No, you can't go in. I'm sorry. If you try to go in, I'm going to call the security.
Well, and the guy.
I guess Sheldon was different.
The guy.
$500 million.
Exactly. I was just going to say, I mean, I guess if the guy is somebody who gave $500 million to the president, and then the president complains that the guy walks in whenever he wants, I think the president should know why the guy is walking in whenever he wants.
It's called being bought and paid for, right? And, you know, but this is what is very strange is Trump is just, he's just letting it all hang out. But telling guys, I made you money, you bought and paid for me, you know. I mean, look at the Time magazine cover. Hey, it says it all. The president, Israel
needed.
Not America. you know, I think he's joined. He wants to. He felt that Ted Cruz was getting all the credit, and it was time for him to be seen as the number one guy for Israel. I mean, Ted. Who's Ted? I mean, you know, he called Ted's wife or intimated all sorts of nasty things about her. Said his father was involved in the assassination of JFK.
And yet
Ted supports him, Donald Trump.
You know what's interesting about all of this, though? It's interesting that some people will say, I like this, because every other president has done this crap and gotten away with it, but at least Donald Trump is out there and doing it out in the open. At least he's honest about it. He's more transparent about the fact that he's doing the same things that the other guys did, and those guys were all crooks. That's what you hear people say. Can you argue with that?
Well, I mean, yeah, I can argue with it. I used to be a prosecutor. I used to throw people in jail, and you know, I didn't have any problems with that.
And
I was a defense attorney, and I had to defend them. I'd say, well, the way I can defend you is I'll make sure you don't get any more than you deserve. Mm-hmm. I don't think that was a very popular way of approaching it. They said, how can you get me off? I said, well, you did it. I mean, I'm not asking you did it. The police have you on camera doing it. How do you expect me to get you off? Anyways, no, I mean, this is kind of like cheating on your taxes. Everyone does it, so it's okay if I do it. This is rooting for anti-government. If everyone is a crook, right, what does that mean? That means that you don't have a government. And this is the serious part of it. Donald Trump has transformed his MAGA base into almost like a cult. I talked to people. I said, what about this? What about that? These are friends of mine. And I said, you know, look, I know you know, you're fed up with the system. I know that both parties have lied to you over the last 45 years that real median income has not real gone forward. Everyone says they're going to change things and nothing gets changed. Mm-hmm. But, you know, this idea that voting for a known charlatan, put a crook to catch a crook. No, all you get is him getting rich. And, you know, the voters are coming up, you know, a year from now, they'll be looking at what they want. And the question is, do they want a president who got rich while they got poor? And I think I used to run elections in the U.S. At the local level, participated in state and federal level. I can tell you people vote with their pocketbook. And right now, his base is shattering around not only what the tariffs are doing to them in terms of cost, but also this question about, you know, the secrecy behind the Epstein files.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And that is weighing heavily. And this is one of the reasons that he was so upset. I mean, he doesn't know what to do. He cannot seem to do anything that stops the daily grind of Epstein. Today, you know, his campaign manager from Kentucky, diddling little boys. I mean, convicted of it, pled guilty, whatever. You know, what can you say? His best friend, Epstein, his spiritual advisor, admits to diddling a little girl a while back. His campaign manager in Kentucky, yes, the same. He had an advisor in the White House who was also diddling little boys. I mean, you know, it just goes on and on, the people around him. And here he has his own statements about, you know, grab them by, and then, you know, I could go into the dressing room, watch them while they were all naked, this, you know, this teen pageant. I mean, you start looking at all the things that he said, the 6, 7, 8 women who've stepped forward and said that he was, he sexually harassed them and touched them and raped them and things like this. I mean, what can you say? How much more do you need before you start to question whether he is the guy that he says he is? So,
none of that seems to matter, as you just so well illustrated, if the American people feel like they have something in their pocketbook that they didn't have before. And they voted for Donald Trump because they felt that Joe Biden wasn't taking care of them. Here's the money question then. Mr. Trump and others say these tariffs will put money back in the pockets of Americans at some point. Is there any explanation that you can come up with where the tariffs that we're now imposing on China and all these other countries will, in fact, make Americans better off?
No, I mean, you're seeing it right now. Tariffs are a regressive tax, all right? And they hit hardest those who have the least amount of money. If you need sneakers for your kids, if you're going to buy a toy for Christmas, if you need tires for your car, parts for your car, if you need to fix your vacuum cleaner or buy a new one, if you need a washer, dryer, all of these things, you're by adding money onto that, he's really hitting these parts out. If I'm rich, you know, a few extra bucks here and there isn't going to kill me. But if I'm living paycheck to paycheck or less than that, I feel I've maxed out my credit cards and I'm buying groceries on buy now, pay later. I don't have that kind of money. And these regressive taxes are taking away. Now, giving it back, he's floated all sorts of ideas. I'll give you $1,000 a pop, kind of helicopter money. But it's not enough. It's, you know, it's the amount of money between inflation and the effect of the tariffs. I mean, you had real growth in disposable income over the first 6 months of 0.1% in the U.S. Compare that someplace like China, where they had 5.4%. What's the difference there? A lot. And, you know, this is the thing. Donald Trump is making a lot of promises, hasn't delivered. And next year, when people look at this, they say, thanks. Now, he said to the farmers, oh, look, you lost your market in China. You know, I'm going to give you a little money. Is it enough to keep them out of bankruptcy? And what these farmers are saying is, we don't want handouts. We're farmers. We're proud of what we do. We want markets. Because next year, unless you bail us out again, we're not going to have a market. So what am I supposed to do? What is my future in farming? To become a welfare handout on the hopes that, you know, whoever is president is going to take money from one group of people and give it to me?
Yeah. It
doesn't make sense. It's not the American way. And ironically, this is everything that Donald Trump has said he's campaigning against. He's, you know, talking about those welfare people and, you know, those immigrants, they're using our resources and all this kind of stuff. Well, those immigrants were also the ones who are picking all the fruit and helping the farmers, milking the cows. And now they're not there.
Yeah.
And these farmers are getting hit from all directions. They don't have the labor to do what they need to do. And they don't have the markets to sell what they need to sell.
Yeah, it could be a real tough situation for them. Let me ask you about, since you mentioned China, going back there, I remember I talked while I was in China covering the Shanghai Cooperative Summit. I had a long conversation one afternoon with Victor Gao, and he told me that the biggest issue China has had, when things start getting really nasty between China and the United States, or at the precipice of this thing, the origins of this thing, I suppose, he says, was when China felt like the United States was weaponizing the dollar, that they were literally using as a weapon against other countries, most notably against China. Do you agree with that statement?
I think the weaponization was happening mostly against Russia first. The SWIFT system this is for people who don't know, we created in the U.S., we created this system where banks can have one clearing bank so that if I'm transferring money from Norway to America or South America or something, there's a clearing bank. And that's the SWIFT system.
Mm-hmm.
And they make sure that everything is secure and that, you know, that things are going back and forth. And it was located in Europe. Why? Because it's controlled by the U.S., but the idea was that the U.S. would never weaponize it, that this would be sacred, that this was just purely about trade, that this wasn't about one country taking over the world and using, you know, the SWIFT system as a blunt instrument to get what they want. Well, the U.S. violated that. They did that with Iran. And then, you know, once you start down the slippery slope, it's really easy to continue going. And now it's gotten to the point where you have Europe joining in, saying they're just going to seize money from people they don't like and use it however they feel.
Russia, too.
Well, yeah. You can't have an international system if people are just taking money. Now, China has been brought into that, and you know the and indirectly because they were using the dollar as a trade dollar,
mm-hmm.
right? So what happens? I explain it simply. If I buy goods from another country, that country wants to have a stable currency exchange rate because there could be some time difference in between. So people buy dollars and they exchange dollars, but they don't bring all the money home, only a certain amount of it. They keep a certain number of dollars in treasuries because treasuries are safe, right? They don't go down by 10% or 11% like they have this year, right? They're supposed to stay in a very narrow range, have small interest rates, but be very, very safe, not volatile. So China was in the situation where the U.S. is weaponizing the dollar, and there became concerned. The U.S. says, we're not going to buy stuff from you. And therefore, China has been reducing the dollars they hold because they don't need them. It's not a good investment. They can invest elsewhere. They just keep enough dollars there so that they can do trade with other nations. But now that is dwindling. And you have Donald Trump saying, Rick, you know, I tell you, Rick, I want to play poker with Donald Trump because he has more tells than anybody I've ever, well, not ever met, but he really does. I mean, anytime he's afraid, he comes out with some bombastic statement. Like, he's concerned about BRICS coming together and being a bigger bully than he can be. Going to the U.S. and saying, we're 40% of the world's GDP. Guess what? Knock it off. And if you don't, we're going to start taxing your services trade where you have a surplus. We're going to put tariffs on your goods so that no one's going to buy them. And we can buy the same things from Europe. And they'll be very happy about that. In that case, Trump has nothing to do except taco. And that is something he doesn't want. He does not. He's enraged that China's standing up to him, that China has cards he doesn't, that he can't force this thing. He's a bully, but he only knows doubling down. That's what he was taught by Roy Cohn,
right,
the infamous lawyer who represented the House Un-American Activities Committee. The red's under the bed. That's who he learned it from.
Is China bound to win this game, in your estimation, based on what you were just saying? It seems to me like they always play the long game, and Trump is playing for tomorrow and maybe yesterday while they're all the way out into next year. What do you
think? Let me put this to you carefully. I mean, what you have is a situation where China is going to is feeling pain. There are companies out there that are feeling pain. So it's not China's wind and, you know, everything like that.
Right,
yes,
right.
Their trade increased by 8%, even though their trade with the U.S. went down. They're still continuing to do markets, but it is causing pain, especially to individual companies who depended on selling things to the U.S. Over the long run, the major difference is planning. China has five-year plans. They're about to begin on their 15th five-year plan. And these plans are glacial. They don't jump one way or another way because of who's in. They adjust, right? Hmm. They develop long-term goals, and then they implement them. And then every year, at what the U.S. always refers to as a rubber stamp, right? They are called to account and have to give a report on everything that they promised last year. And if they don't report that, it becomes a huge issue. If they did it, say you did it. If you did it halfway, say you did it halfway. If you didn't do it, you have to admit that. Now, there is no country on earth right now that has a government system that grades itself every single year. And they continue to plan. And when they have a problem, and they do, China has plenty of problems. It's not a problem-free zone. The difference is they recognize this as a problem. And they say, okay, we have to figure out what we're going to do about it. In the U.S., we have problems. Education, social welfare, our debt. What do? Let's see if we can shove it under the rug one more time, and then we'll deal with it after I get reelected. Except that never happens. It never comes to the point. We have to deal with our problems. We just make new promises for next year. And this is why people have lost faith in the political system, and why they would vote for somebody like Donald Trump, who's a convicted felon, has been involved in fraud cases, six-time bankrupt, multiple allegations of the sexual misconduct, the statements he himself has made, which clearly indicate that he believes in this kind of stuff.
But
somebody whose wealth has tripled, while America's wealth has dwindled.
Well, Jimmy Carter actually ended up bankrupt after being the president because he was too busy trying to do the president's job, which is a fascinating comparison. Wow. Einar Tangen, what a fascinating conversation. You are so smart, and I so enjoy listening. No, you really are. I mean, you've got such a handle on these things, and you're so good at explaining them. It's such a pleasure to be able to talk to you.
It's very kind of you to say so. I appreciate the questions and the ability to banter a little bit about what are in the end very serious issues.
These are important issues, and that's why we tackle them, and that's why we have people like you on to try and take us through it. And you are a little antagonistic about things, which is kind of what I like about you, so I appreciate
it. Not me. I mean, a lawyer, investment banker, politician, ex.
We will
be antagonistic. I can't believe it.
We will talk again, my friend, because of that.
All right,
God
Rick,
bless
thank
you.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
All the best.
You too.
Bye-bye.
I'll tell you what a great conversation. He definitely has some very strong opinions. And that's why we have people on this show, to share their opinions. And I'd love to know what you have to think about what some of the things that he said. Do you agree with him? Go to my YouTube podcast. It's right there at Journalistically Speaking. It's doing really well, by the way. A lot of people are watching what we do, and so many people are commenting. It's kind of crazy lately. Also, X, yes, go to X or Twitter. Rick Sanchez TV, tons of comments and engagement that's going on there as well. In fact, we ran out of time, but I wanted to read some of the comments. I'll do it tomorrow. Tomorrow I want to read you some of the comments that have been coming in just from X in particular, because some of you guys are saying some really nice things, and some of you are saying some not so nice things, which is cool. I'm okay with it. Thanks for being with us. Thanks for letting us into your homes. And I'll be looking for you again next time.